Welcome to Property Uncover Show. This is Sanjeev Shah, your host. At Property Uncover Show, I have the privilege to interview real Australian investors who share their wisdom by uncovering their property journey, mindset, who they are, when and what made them inspired, what are they doing differently, which helps them act and make a difference to their own and loved one's life. Let's get into this episode so we all can learn from our guests' success and most importantly their mistakes so we avoid repeating them. Hi everyone, Sanjeev here. Today I have the privilege to interview someone who is a passionate property investor. He's also the owner of Hunter and Scribe, a copywriting agency that specializes in property and finance. Outside work, he's in the process of having launched with 500 exchanges in 5 years. So let's get into this episode. Welcome, Nick.
Thank you for having me, Sanjeev.
How are you?
I'm going very, very well, and I'm excited to be here. And you mentioned the 500 lunches I'm having. You were the 116th person I had lunch with.
Thank you so much, Nick. I know you love networking and meeting people and really get into their story and such a good listener. Now, first of all, thank you so much for joining me today.
It's great to be here. I've been listening to the Property Uncovered podcast since it started and I've really enjoyed the other investor stories. So I'm honored that I now get to be a guest.
Our pleasure, Nick. So as usual, you have so many things to share, but I think it'll be good to start with your background. You know, how did you get into this copywriting, which I'm really looking forward to listen, and of course, your property journey. So,
well, I'm a journalist by trade, Sanjeev, and I accidentally, about 10 years ago, got a job in which I was writing about property and finance, which I'd always had an interest in business and money. But I didn't really know anything about property and finance, but I fell in love with it very, very quickly. And it was so interesting every day to be talking to property and finance professionals and learning about different property markets around Australia and how home loans work. And it gave me an incredible education. And it also gave me an interest in investing. Until then, I hadn't bought any investment properties, but it did make me start to think about whether that was something I should maybe consider, because the people I was talking to every day, I was talking to mortgage brokers and buyer's agents and real estate agents. These were people, of course, who help others buy property and who had their own property portfolios. And so I was having these discussions every day and it made me think, oh, maybe that's something I should do as well.
Okay, so for you, it was seeing those stories, talking to people in property and finance that made you curious to say, hey, I should also look into it. Is that right?
Exactly. Until then, I had a fear about debt. I understood the mathematical advantages of getting a mortgage. So I understood why a mortgage made mathematical sense. But I just didn't want one ever. I hated the idea of owing someone money. And so that was a big psychological hurdle I needed to overcome, because if you're not going to take out a mortgage, it's almost impossible to get an investment property. But through having these conversations every day with mortgage brokers and buyer's agents and real estate agents, little bit by little bit, I started to change my thinking around borrowing money. And then that then made me also think, oh, you know, maybe this investment property thing, maybe that is something I should do. And little bit by little bit, I changed my mindset. And then ultimately in 2015, I bought my first investment property.
Okay. So, you know what, Nick, because I meet a lot of people and still see, like, you know, people have fear of loan. I mean, of course, they want to invest in property, but that the fear of taking a mortgage is what keeping them away from the property world. So it was interesting when I heard about you, like, you know, like now, of course, you're doing really well in property investing in business. But then, so how long it took for you and what exactly you did to overcome these fears?
I think it was partly around getting more educated around borrowing money and investing in property, because often we fear what we don't know. So the more you know, the less you fear. Ultimately, though, it was still scary to buy that first one. So it was just, I didn't buy because I eliminated my fear. I bought because I decided that I just needed to ignore my fear and push through it. And funnily enough, I remember the month or so that the settlement process lasted and how nerve-wracking that was. But as soon as the process was over and I made my first mortgage payment and then I saw my first rental payment land in my bank account, I suddenly thought, oh, well, what was I so worried about? This is all pretty easy. And since then, it hasn't been a problem. But that very first one, that was a very big psychological hurdle I needed to overcome.
So how did you eventually buy your first property? Like, do you want to talk about that, where it was, and how did you finally make the plunge of putting the offer and all those things?
This is an interesting story, Sanjeev. I had a very happy accident with my very first property. So I'm from Sydney, and it was 2015. It was early 2015, and I was looking to buy this first investment property, and I had a budget of $400,000. And at the time, Sydney was experiencing a boom, and there weren't many places where I could buy what I thought was a good property for $400,000. And so there were a limited number of markets, and I would look in these places and I would make an offer on a property worth, say, a property that had been priced at, say, $350 or $360. But because there was a boom going on, the property would then sell for $450 or $500. And this went on for 3 months where I kept missing out on properties and I was paying for building and pest inspections and missing out. And after about 3 months, I thought, I'm never going to be able to buy a property in Sydney. And as a result, I need to look outside Sydney. And if I'm going to look outside Sydney, I can't do it myself. And therefore, I need to engage a buyer's agent. And I remember when I appointed my buyer's agent, the very moment I did that, I suddenly thought to myself, oh my God, why did I ever think that I could do this myself? Because this buyer's agent, he knows so much more than me. He knows which markets to buy and what type of property to buy, and he knows how to negotiate it, and he knows how to do due diligence. He knows all these things that I could never hope to know. And this is why I say it was a happy accident. I feel so grateful that I got priced out of the market because it forced me to use a buyer's agent. And I should point out, one of the places I was looking to buy was in the Sydney suburb of Parramatta. And I made an offer on a few different apartments. And at the time, I didn't realize. So part of the reason I chose Parramatta was that I thought correctly that it would be an area in strong demand. But I didn't realize that property isn't just about demand. It's about supply and demand. And after I kind of moved on from Parramatta, they built about 1 million new apartments in the years since. And I now feel so lucky that I didn't buy an apartment there, because there would have been no scarcity at all. I would have been one of 1 million apartment owners in Parramatta, and that property would have had very, very little capital growth. I ended up buying in Hobart in 2015. I paid $362,000 for a house, and that property is now worth $750,000.
Awesome. And that's why sometimes, you know, the problems can be the best lesson and turned out to be a really good thing for you. Now, tell me, like, back in 2015, was buyer agent a big thing? Because I know buyer agent has been very emerging in the last couple of years, but back in 2015, like, how did you find a buyer agent?
Not many people were using buyer's agents. I think the only reason I knew about them was because I discovered them as part of my work. And I was talking to buyer's agents and interviewing them for stories, and one of the buyer's agents I interviewed, I formed a very positive opinion about it and ended up using his company. So from memory, when I told a few people I was using a buyer's agent, I think some of them either didn't know what a buyer's agent was, or they thought, oh, are you sure you want to do that, Nick? Are you sure you want someone else to make such a big financial decision for you? But as I said to them, well, I'd much rather an expert make the decision than me, who knows absolutely nothing about it. And another interesting question I got asked was, when I told some people, the people who knew what a buyer's agent was, they would always ask me, oh, so where have you told your buyer's agent to buy? And I said to all these people, well, I'm not telling the buyer's agent where to buy. That the buyer's agent has that expertise, not me. So he's going to tell me where to buy. And it would never have occurred to me to choose Hobart. And that's why I'm very glad that, as I say, there was this happy accident that forced me to use the buyer's agent. But the moment I ended up appointing a buyer's agent, I was very, very happy to rely on his expertise, because I knew that he knew 1 million times more than I did.
Yeah, true. I mean, we all know leverage is the keyword, right? Okay. And now looking back after that, what happened, Nick, with your property journey?
Now, I don't know if this is going to be kind of the right answer to the question, Sanjeev. So since then, I bought the first property in 2015. I then thought, well, this isn't as scary as I imagined. And so I started saving up for the next one. And then I was lucky enough to buy a property in Brisbane in 2017 for $395,000.
And where was that?
That was in the Brisbane suburb of Kallanga.
Okay. So again, another great market. And did you this time use a buyer agent or you did yourself?
I used the same buyer's agent. From that first experience, I realized that it makes no sense for me, who is a complete amateur and completely clueless, to be making decisions about what markets to buy in and then what properties to buy in those markets. So I very happily relied on an expert to make those decisions for me. And for any properties that I might buy in the future, I would only use a buyer's agent.
Okay. And that's your philosophy. Now tell me, Anik, how many properties right now we have got? I know you have got a property in Sydney, you're owner occupied. Along with that, how many investment properties we have and what sort of capital growth you have achieved and those sort of details.
So I bought that second one in Brisbane for $395,000 in 2017. And that's now worth $620,000. And then I've since bought a third one. That was just a few months ago on the Sunshine Coast, and that was purchased for $785,000.
So now you're getting very comfortable taking loans?
Well, I'm a lot more comfortable than I was. So I think the total value of the three properties is about 2.1, and the total debt is about 1.3. And there would have been a time when the thought of having that much debt would have just been overwhelming, but now I'm more comfortable with it. I should also point out that I'm quite conservative financially, so I always have at least a 20% deposit, which I know a lot of investors think is too high. I also only do principal and interest. Again, I know a lot of investors prefer interest only, but because I have at least a 20% deposit, that means there's always a big buffer built in. And because I'm paying principal and interest, I know that I can make the repayments, that there's not going to be some sort of problem when the loan reverts from interest only to P&I. And I also make sure that I have a lot of mortgage repayments kind of in the bank so that if rates go up or something happens in my personal life, that I can keep making those repayments. So that helps me deal with the idea of having all this debt.
Yeah, I think that makes sense, right? I mean, there is no one way of doing things. I mean, so you do based on risk profile, what you feel is good. I mean, it's not having cash buffer, putting 20%. There's nothing wrong. I mean, it's not a game of a speed test. You do the way you feel comfortable. And yeah, so I agree with you and the attitude like, okay, you started with so much fear where you like, you know, hold it yourself a long time before you bought your first property. But then now you're, you know, in the motion to buy properties as you feel. And yeah, so, and then, you know, you've got build a good capital, like close to $1 million there. I can see that, right? With including your saving, putting 20% deposit, and, you know, you did well on your capital growth.
Yeah, this kind of goes back to what we were discussing earlier, Sanjeev, where what happens in your mind is so important to the decisions you make. And by improving my mindset, I've been able to make what have turned out to be important decisions in my life.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. You know, how it feels now you have overcome your fears and now have four properties, including your owner-occupied property under your belt.
It feels good, Sanjeev. It's good to know that I'm building wealth when I'm asleep, and that instead of traditionally, if you have a job, you're trading time for money, and that's fine. But it's also good to be able to make money while you're asleep, which is what you do when you have investments. So I'm grateful that I've got these three good properties, and my plan is to hold on to them forever. So I'm looking at these as 50-year investments, and I know in 50 years' time they'll be worth a fortune. And I feel very grateful for that this capital growth is going to slowly but consistently work in the background.
Awesome. Now, you know, moving forwards, what's your plan on your investment journey?
That's actually a question that's come to me at an interesting time in my life, Sanjeev, because I have been saving up for another property, and my plan was to buy a commercial property. The first three were residential, and the reason I wanted a commercial was partly diversification and partly higher cash flow to kind of cancel out the three residential, which combined have negative cash flow before tax. But I recently went and saw a financial advisor, and I told him about my plan, but I also said to him, you're the expert, not me. So I want you to review my finances and look at my goals that I've told you about And I want you to tell me what you think the best option is. And if you think the best option is to buy a commercial property, I'll do that. If you think the best option is to buy a residential property, I'll do that. If you think the best option is to invest in shares rather than property, I'll do that. So I'm definitely looking to invest again. The plan had been a commercial property, but now I'm open. It may turn out to be something else.
Yeah, and I think people who are listening, I think it's a good point what you're mentioning, Nick. Like sometimes, you know, we think we know enough, but then talking to someone expert and saying, hey, let's review this goal. And we talk about, you know, reviewing goals on a regular basis. And that's including the investment plan and the path, right? Like, because now you know exactly where you stand in business, property journey, personal life. And now, okay, I want to go to another milestone. So what best I can do, right? And having a check from a professional, getting the recommendation, the opinion, and learning on the way, I think it's so important. And exactly that's what you're doing. So well done, Nick. I think makes sense. So thank you, Nick. So now my next question is, what three tips you'd give to other investors who are either having similar fear or simply looking to invest in property world?
Oh, I like that question, Sanjeev. So my first tip would be try to educate yourself about property and finance, because I think we're often scared about things that we don't know. So the more we learn about something, the less scared we get, and also the easier it is to make smart decisions. The second tip I would say would be to find a good mortgage broker, someone who you can rely on to give you expert advice about finance and borrowing money and managing debt. And then a third tip would be to speak to a knowledgeable, trustworthy buyer's agent like you, who could give expert advice on what type of property to buy and in what type of location, and also just find a way to bring kind of the property and the finance sides of things together. So I think if someone was to do those three things, it doesn't necessarily mean that they need to go ahead and buy a property, but it does mean that they then are better informed and they're in a better position to decide if they do want to proceed.
Yeah, it's exactly that's what you're saying. Educate yourself, right? From all these angles, and then you can make an informed decision what to do. And yeah, the rest is history. Now, Nick, I know you read thousands and thousands of books. Someone listening, I heard from you and I was like, oh my God, thousand. I know you read a lot of books and I love writing as your profession, professional writer. So yeah, I know someone listening to this. So Nick reads thousands and thousands of books. Yeah, I read like maybe 100 books, but you're in thousands. So tell me about that, Nick. Like, how did it all started reading books? And it's a big number, I think thousands of books to find time. So what sort of books? I'm just curious to know a lot of things about this. So you want to highlight where it started and what sort of books you read?
I've always loved reading, Sanjeev, from when I was a very young child. I know when I was a child, my parents would read books to me. That probably contributed to my love of books. And what I love about books is you get educated and you get entertained, and it allows you to learn about new ideas and to imagine different things. When I was young, I used to read a lot of history books, and I still love history. But now that I have a business, I tend to focus more on business books and personal development books. But for whatever the subject, I just love reading.
Awesome. And now give me your top three recommended books on personal development and three on business side.
Okay, I like that question. Well, you mentioned at the start of the show that I'm having lunch with 500 strangers. So I stole that idea off someone else. There's a woman in Melbourne named Kaylee Chu. She wrote a wonderful book called 100 Lunches with Strangers, and that inspired my idea. So that's definitely been one of the most transformative books I've ever read, 100 Lunches with Strangers by Kaylee Chu. I also love How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie, which a lot of listeners would be familiar with. And more obscure book that also made a big impression on me was a book called The Four Tendencies by Gretchen Rubin, which is about the way we think and what motivates us. So they would be three personal development books. We're going to talk about three business books. Three that come to mind would be Permission Marketing by Seth Godin, How to Get a Meeting with Anyone by Stu Heinecke, and then another one that some listeners may have heard of, Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss, who was a former FBI hostage negotiator.
Awesome. Definitely, I'm going to listen to this, all the three business books. I think I've listened to quite a few books from Seth Godin. But definitely, I'm going to listen to these three books and also the 100, I mean, the first one on the personal development you mentioned about 100 launches and the power of networking, right? So now, thank you, Nick, for sharing all these wisdoms. Now, I know you are expert in doing networking. Educate us in how it benefits and what you do and to do the networking.
Well, I should point out to people, Sanjeev, that I am naturally an introvert and I enjoy being on my own and just staying at home and reading a book. So getting out there and meeting lots of people, that is not naturally the sort of thing I would do. But a few years ago, back in 2019, when I started having lunch with all these people, I recently started my business and I just thought that if I was going to succeed in business, I needed to improve my social skills and build a great network and improve my mindset and just start thinking bigger thoughts and become a better person. So I made a conscious decision to do something unusual and start contacting strangers and asking them if they wanted to have lunch. So my first tip would be, if you do want to build a network, just start contacting people. People are actually really impressed by the fact that I contact them. They see it as an act of leadership and an act of courage. And so people are very impressed if you do that sort of thing. And then as you meet these people, just try to get to know them, do more listening than talking, and you'll learn a lot. And I think you'll also gain a deeper understanding of human behavior. You'll probably gain a deeper understanding of yourself. I think maybe your social skills will improve if that's something that someone feels they need to improve. And then my final tip, Sanjeev, would be if you're looking to network and get to know more people, instead of thinking about trying to sell something to these people or trying to get something from them, just focus instead on building the relationship. And maybe at some point in the future, something will come of it. But I think if the focus is on just getting to know the person, I think that's probably a better way to go about networking than to try to sell or try to take.
So, Nick, do you do like cold calling? You'll just look at someone's profile and call them? Or what's the approach you follow?
Sometimes I do cold call people. Mostly, though, I send them cold messages over LinkedIn. I like to meet a diverse cross-section of society. I've met people from all backgrounds, all ages, all professions. So sometimes I'll be on LinkedIn and I'll see a profile of someone who looks very interesting and I'll just send them a cold message. And other times I will go onto LinkedIn and I will deliberately search for someone from a particular background. But every now and then I do make cold calls. So I know that I wanted to have lunch with a hostage negotiator and I cold called a hostage negotiator and he agreed to have lunch and I wanted to have lunch with a magician and I cold called a magician and he said yes. And I remember I also wanted to have lunch with a QC, a Queen's Counsel, a very senior barrister. So again, I cold called one and he agreed to have lunch with me also. So cold calling can work, but I generally just send cold messages instead over LinkedIn.
Awesome. So it's interesting, Anik, because sometimes we think, oh, doing networking because I've got a business, I need to grow my business, need more clients. But what you're saying is like, even though you're a copywriter in property and finance, but actually you meet all sort of people and intentionally. So is it because you are genuinely interested in learning about them and a true networker rather than looking for a business? Is that right?
Yeah, exactly, Sanjeev. So many of the people I meet could never be clients. And even the ones who could potentially be clients of my business, I never try to turn them into clients. The purpose of these lunches is just trying to learn. And I figure that if I meet people who I wouldn't ordinarily meet, then I'm going to be having conversations that I wouldn't ordinarily have. And therefore, I'm going to learn things that I wouldn't ordinarily learn. And that's why I'm very deliberate in trying to meet a very diverse collection of people. And also, I just find it interesting. I've always been very curious about the outside world, which is probably why I love reading so much. And so I find it so fascinating to meet people from all these different backgrounds. So you mentioned that I write about property and finance. If I was just having lunch all the time with buyer's agents and mortgage brokers and real estate agents, that would get really boring really quickly. As much as I love those people and those professions, it's really, really interesting just to meet people from all different walks of life. I find it so interesting and I learn so much.
Now, Nick, I think you're a true example of being a good student and really interested in learning and knowing people and all sort of including history and what's happening. And, you know, you generally don't have an agenda, and I've met you and I know, you know, how good listener you are. And, you know, generally you're curious and really interested in learning. And that's like what inspired me also when I started this podcast, that, hey, it's not there is agenda is to really inspire people and learn about them also. So now I really love, and of course, you know, not only after meeting you, you know, invest your time to write about them and, you know, and share on the LinkedIn and your social. So I love your work, Nick.
Well, thank you very much, Sanjeev. I remember when we met in 2020, we had a really nice lunch. And one of the things that really impressed me about you was your incredible determination to learn and improve yourself. And I remember you mentioning that you've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on self-education. And you've made a point of broadening your mind and to strengthening your mindset and trying to become a bigger and better version of yourself. And that ultimately led to you to start your own business and to grow what has now become a very, very successful business. I know you've helped many, many property investors buy a lot of really high quality properties. And so it's been really inspirational, Sanjeev, to follow your journey, because you're someone who you keep pushing the boundaries and you keep learning. And as a result, you keep moving your life forward and achieving things which maybe 10 years ago you couldn't have imagined achieving.
Thank you, Nick. No, and I agree with you. I think the commitment to learning and improvement on ourselves, right? And it's an everyday process. So yeah, thanks for your kind words, Nick. Now, your final words for investor looking into investing in current market. There's a lot of fear, especially in the media. And of course, the rate of rises is hitting a lot of people. So what do you have to say, people, you know, either looking to grow their property portfolio or starting investment journey in the current market?
My feeling, Sanjeev, is interest rates have been rising for about 8 months or so. And of course, that's not nice. But by historical standards, interest rates are actually a bit below average. And if when we buy a property, it's generally a 30-year mortgage. And over those 30 years, rates are going to go up and they're going to go down and the economy is going to be strong and the economy is going to go into recession and all sorts of things are going to happen. And we can't really control any of that. All we can do is hope for the best and prepare for the worst. And so just me personally, I make sure that I always have very solid buffers in place to cope with rising interest rates, to cope with some sort of crisis in my life that might affect my capacity to earn income. And that way, I know that even if rates go up, even if some sort of accident happens in my life, I can continue to make the mortgage repayments. And I also look at property as a long-term investment. When I buy a property, it's not a 50-week investment. It's a 50-year investment. And over 50 years, I think the long-term trend will be for the price of those properties to increase and for the rents of those properties to increase. But those increases won't happen in a straight line. There'll be times when prices go up and prices go down, and times when rents go up and rents go down, times when interest rates go up and interest rates go down. But by taking a long-term view, it means that you can be a lot more philosophical about whatever happens in the short term. So while I haven't enjoyed these recent interest rate rises, I'm quite philosophical about them, and I try to ignore them because I've planned for those sorts of rate rises.
No, I agree with you. I think, yeah, planning and looking at the history and what has happened and looking at a long-term view, definitely. I think property is a long-term, and yeah, I think we need to be planning, as you said, right? Plan for the worst. And that's what I think is the game here. So thank you so much, Nick. I think I really appreciate sharing your wisdom and journey. It's been really inspiring, and I'm sure it will help a lot of the audience. Now, finally, what's the best way people can reach out to you if they need any help or want to talk to you, Nick, or join for the lunch?
Well, if anyone wants to contact me, Sanjeev, I'm very active on LinkedIn. So I would say to people, just send me a message over LinkedIn. That would be a great way to start the conversation.
Awesome. Thanks again, Nick, and have an awesome day. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Hope you enjoyed and learned something new from this episode. Please don't forget to review our podcast and tune in every Tuesday, 8 a.m. Sydney time, to listen to all our inspirational guests and learn from their property journey. In case you're looking for help with your property investment journey or building a property portfolio, please visit our website www.investorsdream.com.au to learn more about us and our services. And feel free to book a call from our website for a friendly chat. Have an awesome life and happy property investing.